today's Teisho will be on case 6 in the Heikigan Roku, the Pien Lu, the Blue Rock Collection. Case 6 is entitled, Umon's Every Day is a Good Day. Main subject, Umon addressed the assembly and said, I am not asking you about the days before the 15th of the month, but what about after the 15th? Come and give me a word about those days. And he himself gave the answer for them. Every day is a good day. Secho's verse, setting aside one, you gained seven. No one can rival you above, below, in the four directions. Quietly wading the rapids, you extinguish the sound of the waters. Watching at leisure, you retain the tracks of flying birds. Grass grows rampant, mist lies thick. Famed for emptiness in Zazen, yet flowers rain down on you for shame. Snapping my fingers, I scold you, sunyata. Don't be confused, or else 30 blows. So, for those of you who are here for the first time, this is known as a teisho, or a talk on Zen practice. And what I read is called a koan. Koans are stories that were used in China for the training of Zen monks and nuns. In the Buddhist world, by this time, in China at any rate, by this time, people were very familiar with the basic principles of Buddhism. So pretty much, maybe almost all literate Chinese people, and many illiterate Chinese people, knew about the Four Noble Truths. The idea that the first truth is that life is suffering, you know, that there's a way out of suffering, and so on. They knew about the Eightfold Path. So they had all learned the ideas or the conceptual structure of Buddhism. For a long time I was involved with a Sri Lankan community here. One of our members, who has since passed away, was a Sri Lankan, and I was asked to do things with the Sri Lankan community. And the Sri Lankan community is very interested in studying Buddhist scriptures, committing them to memory, and treating them as the law. See, as the law. And so, you know, when somebody dies, they shake their heads and they all say, ah, yes, impermanence. See? If somebody loses his house, you know, they think, ah, yes, the workings of karma, and so on. In China, once Buddhism began to take root, and in places like Sri Lanka today, they think of Buddhism as a set of beliefs that you can study and learn. But, you know, actually, if that was all there is to Buddhism, it would be very shallow, and it wouldn't really be very useful. Let me illustrate what I mean. I remember being in college, taking a course in college, on environmentalism, and one of the readings we read was called "A Reverence for Life." Reverence for Life. And the author was talking about how we need to see animals as having their own sacredness, basically. Animals have a kind of sacredness. And in the West, you know, we tend to think of humans as having souls and being somewhat sacred, whereas animals are not sacred at all. See, that's a Western view. Animals not sacred, humans sacred. Animals no souls, humans souls. So, you know, we were taking this course and we were reading this very interesting man who was arguing that we should see nature as sacred. And I remember coming home and having a conversation with my friend Larry, because we were both in this course and we were talking about how important it was to have reverence for life. And at that minute, a fly landed on the table and my friend Larry just swatted him like that. And we both looked down at the dead fly and we started laughing, because we realized that we were talking about reverence for all life. And we had been studying this writer who was talking about this idea. But when a fly came into the room, you know, my friend instinctively swatted the fly and killed it. So we realized, I'm sorry we had to sacrifice the fly. But we realized that our ideas did not change our behavior. You know, it was very, very big. It left a big impression on me, because I remember this event even now. You know, ideas don't necessarily change your behavior. So you know, actually, you know, studying the sutras is a good thing. I highly recommend that you read, say, the Diamond Sutra, which is a very important sutra for Zen. And if you're interested in Buddhism at all, please read the Diamond Sutra. The truth is that even if it were easy to understand, and it's not, it wouldn't necessarily change anything in your life. It wouldn't. Because ideas don't have that power. They don't have that power. You know, if it were just possible to say, you know, I have a friend of mine whose son has been in some fights at school. And my friend is a very caring mother. And, you know, she's so frustrated. She says, I ask him, I beg him, don't get into fights. You know? And, you know, probably when he goes to school thinking, fighting is bad. But, you know, at some point in the day, he gets into a fight. Because, you know, just resolving and not to fight doesn't solve the problem. It's just an idea. I hope I'm making this clear. So, you know, we put a lot of faith in ideas, but ideas are very shallow. You know, they really don't change us very much. You know, this is why, you know, I don't want to sound too, a few days ago, one of the political leaders in New York State, was indicted. In fact, both the House and Senate in the state of New York, the leaders of both of these houses are indicted. And one of them was just convicted of massive corruption just yesterday. The interesting thing is that all these people are lawyers, you know. You know, lawyers study the law, but studying the law doesn't make you an honest person, see. This is obvious, but it's all the same something we don't usually think about. If you want to be a good person, studying the law is not the way, you know. If you want to be an enlightened person, actually, reading the sutras is a good start, but it won't do the job. You know, if you read a sutra and you begin to get a sense that you're understanding what enlightenment might be, you know, you close the book, you drive down the street, somebody cuts you off in traffic, and you find yourself wanting to scream at him, right? So ideas don't go very far. So, you know, in China, you know, many Zen masters noticed this. Many Zen teachers noticed this, that basically just telling people about the Dharma doesn't solve the problem of changing their consciousness. You know, so Zazen is really quite different from reading a book. You know, seated meditation is a whole body experience. You know, body and mind are a unity. And when we sit down on the cushion, you know, we are learning how to enter an altered state of consciousness, definitely. You know, meditation involves learning how to enter at least one altered state of consciousness, which we call samadhi. And in that state of samadhi, you're very, very open, and your relationship to the world is different too. You're very open to the world. You know? So samadhi is a really special state, and Zen practice is the foundation of Zen practice is entering this altered state of consciousness. And then we begin to change ourselves, transform ourselves on a deeper level, on this level of spontaneous action, right? You know, if you are an angry person, it doesn't do any good to just say, don't be angry. I'm not going to get angry today. Because you have all of these deeply embedded mental habits that make you angry. And even reading a book on anger management isn't really going to solve the problem. You know, you have to open yourself up and go deeply into yourself and begin to change who you are. And this is not a matter of ideas. It's much more complicated, and it's somewhat difficult. So Zen practice is about sitting on the cushion and entering an altered state of consciousness where we have more direct access to the part of our mind that interacts with the world in an unselfconscious way. It's like opening the engine of a car, right? You know, normally the engine of the car is invisible and we drive around, but if there's a problem, we open the engine. You could think of meditation as a little bit like that. You know, you're lifting the hood so that you can look inside. And this is challenging for people. It's one of the reasons people don't meditate. You know, many people think that meditation is just a stress reduction strategy. But when you begin to do meditation in earnest, when you begin to do it on a regular basis, you're lifting up the hood, looking at the engine. And you can see all the oil leaking out and all the burned out spark plugs and so on and so on. You have to start being a mechanic of yourself and changing these parts. You know, this process is deeper than ideas can go. So in Zen practice, we use what are called koans. And these are stories that might seem to have no point or might not have an obvious point. And this is one of them. Umon is a great Zen master whose name means cloud gate or gate of cloud. Umon addressed his monks and nuns one day and he said, I'm not asking you about the days before the 15th of the month, but what about after the 15th? Come and give me a word about these. If Umon I had just walked into the Zendo and said, "How is your Zazen going?" See, how is your Zazen going? And I do that. I ask people, "How is your sit?" But Ulan is a really great Zen master, and he doesn't ask students that. He asks them a harder question to test. Rather than saying, "You tell me how your sit was today. You tell me about your meditation today." Ulan tests them. He says, "I'm not asking you about before the 15th of the month. I'm asking you about after the 15th. What about that?" See? And that's a Zen question. It's like a fly buzzing into your dining room while you're having a discussion. Will you swat it, or will you turn to the fly automatically with, like, love? Like love, yes. If that's what Buddhism is all about. You know, there was a very famous Zen master named Soyen Shaku. And he went to Sri Lanka from Japan. And in his memoirs, he describes meditating one night. He was on a river boat in Sri Lanka. And he wanted to do Zazen in this beautiful tropical paradise. So he sat down on the boat, which was basically anchored and not moving. And he started to do meditation, and all of these mosquitoes started biting him. And being a Buddhist monk, he did not swat the mosquitoes. He said he sat all night and his face looked like a cherry tomato by morning. And you could think that's a little absurd, but, you know, he had deeply cultivated awakened mind. Everything I encounter is my true self, even a mosquito, even a fly, see. So saying this is one thing, feeling it is another, and acting it is still another. You know, so basically, these koans are meant to test your awareness and lead you to deeper awareness. So when Master Cloudgate comes into the Zen hall and everybody's been meditating, instead of saying, "How was your sit?" he asks them a question. He said, "I'm not asking you about before the 15th of December. I'm asking you about after the 15th of December." Now, you know, if you haven't been in deep samadhi, if you haven't been meditating deeply, you might think, okay, wait. Before the 15th of December, there's nothing. But after the 15th of December, there's Christmas. There's Hanukkah and Christmas. Actually, Hanukkah's starting. But you could say, you know, before the 15th of December is Hanukkah. And after the 15th of December is Christmas. You know, that's the answer you could give the teacher. But you know, that wouldn't be a good answer, actually. Because there's a kind of consciousness that makes distinctions, and there's a kind of consciousness that experiences oneness. See? So you know, when the fly buzzed into the dining room while I was arguing with Larry about the sacredness of life, we both automatically made a distinction between ourselves and a filthy insect. And you know, if Larry hadn't swatted the fly, I probably would have swatted the fly, because it was instinctual. It was just like, there's a fly, swat it, quick, before it makes our food before it lands on our food with its filthy feet. So you know, there's a kind of mind that is all the time separating ourselves from the world. It's constantly, we call this the discriminating mind, or self-awareness. You know, we're constantly separating ourselves from the world. And we spent most of our time in that consciousness. Constantly, I get up in the morning and I think, you know, I'm a human being too. I get up in the morning, and before I do my zazen, you know, I think, what does Kurt want? You know, what would Kurt like today for breakfast? And I have some, you know, a yogurt, or I have some waffles, you know, I have some wheat-free waffles that I could put in the toaster. I can have a cup of tea before I do my zazen. Or I can have some brown rice and some chickpeas, you know. So, you know, I ask myself, what would you like? And then I think, oh, not the waffles today. I'll have the chickpeas. To coffee or tea, sir? Oh, I'll have tea, thank you. So, you know, all day long we're sort of taking care of the self, of the personal self. And that involves separating ourselves all the time. We're always picking and choosing, picking and choosing. I like this, I don't like this. I like you, I don't like you. And this is our normal consciousness. So you know, when Master Cloudgate enters the room and he asks his students, I'm not asking you about before the 15th, I'm asking you about after the 15th. He wants to see what consciousness they have been in on the cushion. Now, if you ever go to a Zen temple, if you ever go to a Zen temple, you know, people have ideas that everybody in a Zen temple or a Buddhist temple is probably deeply awake. But it's not true. You know, people in a Buddhist temple are trying to become enlightened. Most of them aren't. So, you know, if you could see into the minds of all of Yunmen's monks, you know, they'd be thinking different things. So, you know, some of them are sitting on the cushion thinking, when is this sit going to be over? My legs are bothering me. Right? Somebody's on the cushion thinking, what's for lunch? You know, I hope it's not black beans and rice again. You know, I'm so sick of that. I would give anything for some fresh vegetables, right? Somebody else is mad at another monk because that monk has gotten a better seat in the zendo. See, this is the human comedy. You know, so Yunmen comes in and asks this question. He wants to know, what consciousness have you been in? Discriminating self-centered consciousness, or there's another consciousness, see, that doesn't separate, but unites with the world around it, becomes one with, see. So, as soon as we begin to see the world from the standpoint of the self, what would you like for breakfast, Kurt? We're separating ourselves from the world, but we have this capacity for another kind of consciousness which connects with the world. We don't cultivate this in ordinary life. You know, if you go to school, you study mathematics, you study writing, you study history. Nobody trains you how to get outside the structure of your own, you could say, egotism. You know, that's really not part of the educational system. Now, you know, people do sometimes do this by accident. So, for example, you know, in sports is actually, in some ways, a very positive experience. You know, I used to be on the swimming team in high school and in junior high, too. And, you know, we would get up in the morning and have to be in the swimming in the pool like at 6 o'clock in the morning. So you had to get up really early and get to the pool by 6. And then you had to do like 50 laps just to warm up. And then we had competitive, what are called heats or races. And You know, 10 people would line up on starting blocks and jump into the water, and then we'd compete with each other. You'd have to do 25 meters or 50 meters, and, you know, there would be the coach with the stopwatch and a whistle, and he'd be screaming at us. So if you're, you know, when you start swimming very fast and you're pushing yourself very hard, after about 25 meters, when you turn around and you're coming back for the other 25 meters, your muscles really begin to hurt. You know, you can even start to have muscle cramps. And so, you know, if you want to be a swimmer, you have to be able to, swim through your cramps. You have to be able to enter like swimming samadhi, right? Really, it's a kind of samadhi. You push aside your pain, and you focus on moving forward. It's like swimming samadhi. If you run track, also, you know, if you run track, you're at some point, especially if it's a longer distance, you know, you reach a point where your muscles are screaming at you. But if you slow down, you will lose the race. So, you know, you learn how to drop out of your small self, your personal self, and enter your big self, the mind that connects. You know, so, you know, if you're in a race, your legs are screaming, you have to be able to become one with the motion of running. You become 100% running. And your small self, your self that says, I want a waffle instead of yogurt, disappears. And, you know, many athletes say that it's a mysterious process. I was reading just about 6 months ago, this athlete who was talking about how he runs, and he says, I got down at the starting block, and he said, the next thing I know, the race is over. He says, I go into a place, you know, I just go into this place where there's no thought. And that is absolutely excellent, see. You know, the great Japanese Zen master Dogen said, to practice the way, to practice Buddhism, is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to become one with the 10,000 things. In other words, becoming one with the world, with the universe. So, you know, we study the self all day long, right? We definitely study the self all day long. We take care of ourselves, which is good. You shouldn't inflict pain on yourself or suffering on yourself. But we become, in caring for ourselves, we become cut off from the larger world. You know, when you you're a competitive swimmer, or when you're running a track meet, you know, you have to really forget the self to become one with the universe, become one with motion, become one with running. See, so athletics is one way people forget the self. To study the self is to forget the self. You know, sometimes you learn how to become, to step outside your small self in other ways. So, you know, if you have a big test, right? Maybe you have a calculus test, and you have to, you know, you're having trouble with the test. You might stay up all night studying for that test. You know, part of you is saying, forget it, go to bed. Just go to bed. But another part of you is saying, I need calculus if I want to be a doctor, or I need calculus if I want to do this. And so, you know, there's a part of you that wants to go to bed, wants to watch TV, and so on. But you say, no, I'm going to stay here and study, and I'm going to master these equations. Right? And, you know, you sit there, and you struggle, and finally you get it. This is a kind of like calculus samadhi, really. So, you know, we do have experiences where we get outside the self. You know, but not often enough, right? So, you know, when Master Yunmen comes into the Zendo, he asks his monks this apparently meaningless question. He says, I'm asking you, I'm not asking you about what happens before the 15th of December. I'm asking you what happens after the 15th of December. Now, if you're in your small self, if you're in your discriminating mind, you'll try to figure it out, right? You'll try to figure it out. You'll think, okay, Hanukkah is before the 15th, Christmas is after the 15th. Or you'll think, there's nothing before the 15th, and then school is out after the 20th, right? And I can go home, and so on and so on. But that's the small mind. So, you know, basically, the monks in Yunmen's community were too smart to give him that answer, right? So they just are quiet, because they know it, whatever they say, he'll understand they weren't really in deep zazen. But, you know, and when nobody answers, Yunmen gives them the answer himself. He says, every day is a good day. See? So he gave them a question that encouraged them to use their discriminating mind, the mind that says, I like this, but I don't like that. And they probably fell for it, but they didn't open their mouths because they've been through this with Yunmen before. Yunmen has trapped them before in showing their own small-mindedness. See? So they just stay quiet, but Yunmen knows they don't know. And so he says, every day is a good day. Now, you know, if your Zen teacher gives you this koan to work on, you have to be able to enter deep samadhi and internalize the koan. And in this case, you could just say day, or every day, every day, every day. Or, you know, you could actually just say good, 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 good. So you sit on the cushion, you enter samadhi, and on each out-breath you could say good, 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 good. And little by little, this is like a psychoactive process. Psychoactive. You know, you will sit on the cushion and think, you're thinking, every day's a good day, every day's a good day, every day's a good day. And then at some point you realize, you know, but what about the day my father died, you know? That wasn't a good day. That was a really bad day. You know, how could Yunmen say every day is a good day? Doesn't he know about days like that? You know, and if you're sitting with something like that, you know, maybe you haven't really thought about it for a while. And you know, as you're working with the koan, as you're saying good day, good, 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 you know, maybe you think more and more of your father's death. And, you know, maybe you find yourself having to struggle with a lot of emotions you haven't struggled with before. You know, you might find yourself angry. You might find yourself feeling abandoned. You might find yourself feeling betrayed. You know, we have all kinds. You might find yourself feeling terribly guilty. Maybe your father died and you weren't able to be there with him. Or maybe he was sick and you didn't notice, see? So at any rate, you know, all of this stuff comes up. You know, now these are the barriers that prevent us from being 100% connected to the world. You know, we all suffer from injuries or events that close us up. You know, about a decade ago, my younger brother died. Imagine that. And, you know, that was very difficult to deal with because, you know, I actually love my brother quite a bit, you know. And his death was not a total surprise because he had been sick, very sick, for a long time. You know, but when it happened, I certainly didn't feel like it was a good day. That was not a good day, damn it, you know, Cloudgate, you know, not a good day. You know, when you have a day like that, if you're not careful, it closes you up. You know, it closes you up. You know, you know, when we're young, you know, little kids, you know, we tend to have a lot of trust in life, you know, a lot of trust. As we get older, you know, we begin to have disappointments, and we begin to experience painful incidents, and these begin to erode our trust in life. They do. They absolutely do. You know, so you know, little by little, it's like we start our lives like an open door or an open hand, and little by little we become like a closed fist. See, open hand, closed fist. And it's a gradual process, but things like going, you know, your first day of school, you're excited about going to school, and some big bully pushes you down on the playground. Next time you go to school, you're not excited anymore. You're afraid. See, that's closing the hand. So, you know, when my brother died, you know, that was definitely a hand-closing moment, a door-closing moment. And if we're not careful, you know, that door becomes very closed. That hand becomes very tightly closed. You know, so Zen is all about opening all those closed doors, opening that closed hand, and regaining our trust in life, even though life does terrible things like killing your brother. You know, and you think, how is it possible? Sometimes, you know, you think, how will I ever trust life again? You know, so if you sit with the koan, every day is a good day. You know, we all have days like the one I'm describing, where we say, God damn it, this is not a good day. But you know, if you stay in that place, your door will close on you. You know? So you know, the Buddha's way, Buddha's path, is to find a bigger way to relate to things, right? And as long as you're in your small self, you will never be able to say every day is a good day. But if you can enter this other mind, this mind of a trusting mind, connecting mind, you know, you can say every day is a good day. You can say it, even though these things happen to you. You know, we spend most of our time in our small self. It's very difficult for the small self to say every day is a good day. We don't get enough practice. We don't spend enough time with our real self, our deeper self, the self that can say every day is a good day. But we should. You know, meditation is so important. If you do it regularly, you're spending some quality time with your true self, with your enlightened mind. See, people think enlightenment is something they have to achieve, but it's something they already possess. The problem is they don't spend enough time with it, see? So all day long we spend all of our time in our self-centered consciousness. And when we come to do Zazen and we sit on the cushion, it can be a struggle because we're still there. But if you practice meditation regularly, it becomes at first easier and then very easy to get into your enlightened mind. But you have to spend time doing it. So if you meditate like once a week, you're not spending enough time with your true nature, with your enlightened mind. If you meditate every day, that's better. If you meditate for 20 minutes, you're just getting close to your enlightened mind, and then you're getting up. See? So, you know, we all have busy schedules, but, you know, life is actually quite short. And it's a shame not to make the acquaintance of your Buddha mind, your enlightened mind. So if you carve out a little time each day to be with your enlightened mind, your true, we say in Zen, your true nature, your life will be so much better, so much happier. It's like we spend a third of our life asleep, and the rest of our time we are taking care of our small self. But if we spend just a little time with the big self, it's hugely liberating. See, you don't have to spend the other 16 hours or the other 16 hours with your big self, but you do have to spend a little time, and it gets easier and easier to be there. So when Yunmen comes into the Zendo, he asks them a Zen question. He asks his monks a question. He says, I wonder where your consciousness is. And he makes a kind of a tricky, uses a kind of trick. He says, I'm not talking about before the 16th, I'm talking about after the 16th. He's inviting them to use their small mind, their discriminating mind. But if you spend a lot of time in Zazen, you won't be trapped by Yunmen's question. You'll just automatically be able to say, every day is a good day, every day is a good day. So, I give you this question, you could say, well, you've already given me the answer, but it's one thing to hear the talk, it's another thing to work with the koan. We all have our own obstacles, and my explaining it like this won't make it any easier, actually, to work with this koan. But working with koans is the opportunity to have a deep transformation. You can read all the sutras you want, and I hope you read them. And you can read books on Buddhism and Zen, and you can read books on Tibetan Buddhism and world philosophy, and I hope you read them. I do. Yeah, I read all the time. But it's no substitute for encountering your true nature. You know, if ideas transformed people, we would already have a wonderful world, right? You know, if you look in the newspaper, it's getting to the point where you almost don't want to look in the paper. I have at least several friends who have told me they're just going to stop reading the news for a while. It's just too terrifying. And I have to admit, the thought of President Trump does make me need to do more Zazen. That's for sure. And you say, how did the world get so crazy? And it's not hard to explain at all, right? If you live in the small mind, the world we see is a small mind world. It's definitely so. People who live deeply in the big mind are rare, very rare. But you can be one of them. And it doesn't take a lot of them. It takes enough to have like a critical mass, right? Everybody doesn't have to meditate, but if enough people know how to do this, it can change the world, right? And that's really what Buddhism was all about, actually. So anyway, you came here today to practice Zazen and be in your big mind. And I thank you for that, because actually, even though it might not seem obvious, your big mind is my big mind. When you take care of your enlightened mind, you're also taking care of my enlightened mind, and I'm very grateful to you. So sitting together like this is a great pleasure, and thank you. And I'm looking forward to doing it again soon.